CodeWinds, Episode 4, a discussion with Pete Hunt on Facebook's hot new JavaScript UI framework, React. Welcome to the CodeWinds podcast, where we cover leading-edge web developer news and training with an emphasis on Node, JavaScript, and HTML5. My name is Jeff Barczewski, and I am here to help you navigate the winds of change. In this episode, I had the pleasure of chatting with Pete Hunt, a software engineer at Facebook. We discussed Facebook's new JavaScript UI framework called React. Facebook's React introduces some new ideas and approaches to building web interfaces, which I find very interesting and compelling. React can be used on the client or server side with Node.js, and can not only render HTML, but also other devices like the canvas. The links and show notes for this podcast are available at codewinds.com/4, as in episode 4. So here's my discussion with Pete Hunt. Well, today I'm talking with Pete Hunt, a software engineer for Facebook. Pete's been involved in implementing the photos on the timeline. He rewrote the face detection and recognition pipeline. He's built the HTML5 full screen photo edit photo viewer. He's rewrote the video and code backend. He's a Huxley project maintainer to help Instagram fight visual regressions, a React core team member, and currently he's building out the front end infrastructure and products for Instagram on the web. So hello, Pete.
How's it going, Jeff?
Good to have you on.
Awesome.
So I guess the big question we're coming here today to ask you about is React. That's one of the hot new products, hot new projects coming out of Facebook. So yeah. What is React, and why might people want to use it?
Well, React is a way to build applications in JavaScript, specifically front end UI or user interfaces in JavaScript. And we released it in May of last year. We open sourced it, but it's actually been in production for a long time. I think since maybe like early 2012 or late 2011. And it's quickly become kind of one of Facebook's premier open source projects. We've got a lot of contributors. I think our last release had like 70 or 80 contributors on the list. We're just really excited that the community has contributed a lot and found it useful. We're just like, it's always great when you can like take a solution that to a problem you had internally and share it with the world, and it just gets better for us and it gets solves a problem for other people. So
yeah, that's excellent. That's wonderful. And it's great to hear that the community has embraced it and started wanted to contribute and all that. That's really, I think, the pinnacle of an open source project is when you can kind of get that that community buy-in.
And So David Nolan is, I think he created ClojureScript, or he's a big figure in the ClojureScript community. Adopted React a while ago, and made the really good point that because they decided to reuse an existing tool in the community, namely React, they're able to get a lot of performance benefits from the work that we do. So in their last, when they upgraded to 0.9, our latest release, they got like a 2x improvement on a lot of their benchmarks. And it's great for us too, because ClojureScript and the Clojure community has a lot of great abstractions for building complex applications, and we're able to take those and kind of backport them and give them to the rest of the JavaScript community. So it's really this symbiotic relationship where, because we decided to not reinvent stuff and instead like reuse the good stuff that's already out there, everybody is benefiting. So it's just been like an enormous win for us.
That's excellent. Yeah, wonderful. So so how did this come about? So back before, you said this has been developing for quite a while, and you've been using it internally. So what brought it about, and what was the pain you guys were experiencing at Facebook and Instagram, and what you know, what brought about the idea to build something like Facebook or React?
Well, right around the end of 2011, there was an engineer on ads who was faced with this problem where nobody really understood how the system worked. So when you create an ad on Facebook, there's a lot of events that fire all the time. You've got to fetch data about who you're targeting and render a preview and all sorts of stuff. And there were maybe two people at the company that could really fit all that whole program in their head. And if they didn't work on it for, you know, a week, they would forget just because it was so complicated.
Right, right.
And the problem is that we had two main ways of building applications before React. The first is we had a global event bus where basically we would have all these different modules and they would broadcast events onto the page and other modules would listen to them and maybe broadcast other events based on other events that were firing. So you've got events on events. That works really well for simple things, like kind of the 2007 era Ajax app. It works pretty well.
Right, right.
When you start building more and more stuff into the front end, it gets kind of unwieldy. So one of the problems that they faced was they were never sure which events were going to fire and in which order. And so when you're accumulating these events, it became very hard to reason about what state your program was going to be in. So this is a recurring theme of React, which is like program state is hard to reason about. So in order to address that, a really popular technique and one that we initially adopted was called is called data binding. And the idea with data binding is basically you've got all this state in your program, and it's hard to keep it synchronized. So let some sort of data binding system bind one piece of state to another piece of state. So the quintessential example is like if you have a to-do list app, right, and you have a count of the number of unfinished to-do items, that state is potentially multiple places in your app. It's in the DOM. The length of the list of the to-do list has that state, and maybe you're storing it somewhere else too, possibly implicitly. And like maybe you've got the number of total to-do items and the number of uncompleted to-do items, and there's some duplicated state in there. So a data binding system basically sets up observers that say, you know, when this piece of data changes, call this callback and make sure that this other piece of data is updated appropriately. And so we started deploying that as part of our ad system as well in a framework that we called Bolt, which we quietly open sourced, but we never really made a big deal about it. It's somewhat similar to like Backbone. Now, this presented its own set of challenges. First of all, it doesn't solve the time problem. So the abstraction is a little bit better than a global event bus, but you still have callbacks firing when you don't expect them to. And you need to make sure that everything is synchronized at every point in time. What's also difficult is keeping track of all those callbacks isn't free. So you pay a cost in terms of code complexity and understanding the performance characteristics. So these systems can be fast. It's just very difficult to understand when you make a change, like how is that going to affect your performance? So what might just be incrementing a single integer, maybe that's very fast and there's only one observer attached to it. Or maybe there's hundreds of thousands of pieces of data that depend on this. And it's very hard for you to know what your program is going to do when you make a change. And when you get something as complex as kind of our power tools for creating ads at Facebook, it's unmaintainable. And so we needed to solve this problem. We all recognized that it was a big problem. So basically, Facebook was really good about just letting this engineer, Jordan, go and run off and prototype this system that eventually became React.
Great. Excellent. And so basically, you wanted to handle all this in a different way than just doing the typical data binding approach. And so what makes, so how does this work? How does somebody use React and how does it not use data binding, but also take the data updates and get it onto the screen?
Sure. There's a couple of core ideas in React, but I'll try to make it as kind of simple as possible. But people like to talk a lot about the virtual DOM and that kind of thing. But that's just a means to an end. So like our main goal here is we want to provide what we like to think of as an immediate mode abstraction onto the DOM. And what I mean by immediate mode is that rather than having this stateful UI, like this stateful DOM where you say, you know, set the class name of this to this value, and then later on you can mutate something else in the DOM. Conceptually, programming like you're throwing away your entire application and re-rendering it every time is a lot simpler. And if you think about kind of how UIs are evolving, they've gotten really complex, and they continue to get very complex. And people often underestimate how complex they get because designers do a great job of making them feel simple.
Right.
So what we've observed is that, you know, what are kind of the most complex user interfaces out there? And they're like 3D games. If you think about it, a lot of them are multiplayer and they're networked and they have different asynchronous events firing everywhere. You need to present a consistent view of the world to multiple users. And the way that they handle that is through the same approach. It's an immediate mode drawing approach. So you have your game state somewhere, and it's the minimal set of state possible, and then you compute everything you need for a given frame and draw it. And so we thought to ourselves, okay, what would it take for us to bring this programming model to UIs, specifically UIs running in the browser? And so that's where the idea of a virtual DOM comes in. So we can't just throw out the regular browser DOM and re-render the whole thing, because if you're typing something in a text box, you'll lose it, or the browser will flash. It's just not going to work. But what we discovered was if we rendered to something called a virtual DOM, where we say, hey, we generate a description of the DOM that we want, and then we diff a previous description with the description that we want to update the UI to look like. We can do that in an efficient way, and the programming model just becomes a lot simpler, and there's a lot of problems we just don't have in this model anymore. So we don't think about synchronizing pieces of data with bindings, and we don't think about events firing because we just have a minimal set of state, and we just paint the browser DOM with it.
Wow. Yeah, so that's a very different approach than what everybody else is doing. And I can see how that would be, you know, much easier as far as being able to think about what's going on and just have simple inputs and outputs and be able to test that and all that. So that sounds really good. So I mean, and the whole idea of basing that premise around, you know, what do games use to, you know, with their high performance needs. I mean, that's amazing that you guys were able to build something like that for the DOM and virtualize that out or whatever. So that's excellent. So so as these events are, or as these the data is changing and you're tracking this in the virtual DOM and then diffing it, then you're able to turn around and just update the DOM with the changes. I guess that's the way it actually gets to the DOM.
Yep, there's two virtual DOMs, and we basically React as a function that takes these two copies of the virtual DOM and emits like a stream of DOM operations. So set property with an ID, a property name, and a value. Or, you know, and you can express most things in terms of that.
Yeah, excellent. The and so this technology runs, it's all running in JavaScript. And so and you basically so how does one program this? Do you need to? I believe you have a couple different ways to do that, right?
A couple different ways to program in React.
Yeah, in React.
Yeah. Well, React is kind of just like a system for mapping a view hierarchy onto some sort of rendering backend, and the one that we most often target is the browser DOM. And so we're pretty unopinionated about everything else.
Okay.
You know, we're almost, if you kind of step back and talk to anybody who works on React, we're really actually less concerned about the JavaScript reference implementation and more concerned about the architecture that that React has.
Oh, okay.
So JavaScript is kind of like our reference implementation.
Yeah.
And so we don't care about anything else. So you can program with React kind of in classic JavaScript. So you can embed a script tag into your page and create a React component and render it into the DOM just fine. That would be kind of similar to how you would get started with jQuery. There are other ways, though. We're on NPM and Bower and Component.io. But you know, there are people building bindings to React all the time. So the ClojureScript community has, I think, 4 or 5 different libraries that are bindings to React. And the reason they have so many is because they're all trying different architectural techniques on top of React. So React is like a way to paint the DOM in an immediate mode fashion. And they're like, okay, now that we have this great abstraction, like what sorts of cool stuff can we do kind of in the data management layer or the handling of events layer that's really interesting? And so they have a bunch of techniques there. You know, we've also got kind of more traditional bindings to libraries like Backbone and some, you know, various routers. We have an implementation of some ideas from the ClojureScript community called Cortex, which is someone in our community wrote based on some of the stuff that's going on in Ohm, which is one of the ClojureScript libraries. So there's a multitude of different ways to do it. I think my favorite is to, there's some starter kits based on NPM, which make it really easy. Just kind of like NPM install and you're ready to go and get started.
Excellent. Yeah, that sounds good. And then I guess another question someone might have is, okay, so sounds really good about, you know, building up the component architecture, the structure, with JavaScript. But what if you wanted to, you know, to involve your designers and all that? So how do you answer that question? What's your solution for involving designers and things?
Well, this is always an interesting question because if you look at React, we don't use traditional templates like something like Ember would use, which is a really popular and high quality framework. And we also don't use any sort of DOM. We don't really interface with like HTML at all directly like Angular does. So they have, Angular is built around the idea of like you add these magic attributes called directives to your page and it makes it dynamic. And I think that the premise of these technologies is sort of to make working with designers easier. Whereas we're kind of like pure JavaScript, like function calls and building up data structures functionally. So at first glance, people think that it's hard for designers to work with React. I actually disagree with that a lot. I was a one-man team on Instagram for a while, and I worked very closely with our designer who contributed a lot of CSS and JavaScript code. And so Instagram.com is like living proof that, you know, designers who write CSS can write JavaScript. I mean, at least the subset that you need to work with a front-end engineer with React. So it's a little less about how easy it is and a little more about how unfamiliar it is. Okay. So you're going to have to change the way you think about applications a little bit. And you're going to have to change some of the syntax you use. But I think that people don't give designers enough respect in the engineering community. So CSS is actually really hard. The way that all these selectors work is really challenging. Like, I don't even understand how it works half the time. And like, I got a degree in computer science. But there are like plenty of designers out there that get it and own it, and they can, you know, they're not gonna, it's not the end of the world if they have to edit a class name and it's in a JavaScript object literal rather than in a file that ends in .html. Mm-hmm. And actually what ends up happening is React encourages you to build a component architecture. So in a traditional MVC system, you actually have kind of like four components. You've got a model, which is a bunch of JavaScript objects that talk to the server. You've got a controller, which is kind of where you pile everything that you don't know where to put it. And you've got a view, which usually has a template attached to it of some type. In Angular, they didn't call it a template, but it kind of is the same thing. It's like an HTML file, effectively. Now, that encourages kind of like a somewhat monolithic architecture. So you've got like this big fat controller that knows everything about a big fat view, which then needs to know everything about the templates. And the templates can be kind of split out. But you've still got these big kind of fat monolithic layers. But the thing is that, you know, your template corresponds to one part of the page, which is then driven by some view logic, which is also driven by some controller logic. And if you look at how designers work, they don't think in terms of MVC at all. They think in terms of components. So I'll grab the way that I build with React a lot is I'll get the Photoshop file from my designer and I'll look at the layer names in Photoshop because they're already designing with components in mind. They're like, oh, this is the profile switcher and it appears in these 10 places. So I'll just copy and paste it from my master PSD. So like that's my blueprint for building React apps. I just build like a component with the same name. And then it makes working with a designer really easy because you know, he just goes in, looks at the layer name, then looks at the JavaScript source file, and then he probably is a little bit upset that he has to edit some JavaScript rather than HTML, but the benefits for the front-end engineers are so far and away worth it that, you know, taking the extra couple of days to figure out that you need to look for class name colon rather than class equals, you know, looking in JavaScript rather than in HTML is totally worth it.
Yeah. Yeah, that sounds really good. Yeah, so that's a pretty good testament as far as taking designers and seeing how they split things up and how that's componentized. And that's a pretty neat approach.
That's what you'll find. Kind of the deeper you dig with React, it's very, very clear that we use this for tons and tons of stuff at Facebook and Instagram. You know, like our error messages are all, they kind of like link back to the documentation, and they're never kind of like a cryptic internal stack trace. There's one in particular that is right now, but like we want to kill it. But everything else is pretty good.
Right. Excellent.
And, you know, getting the designer workflow down is something that we have to deal with as well. And so it's not like we just forgot about that.
Yeah. Yeah. That's good. The I also saw on your website that there's something that helps, I guess, bridge the gap between HTML and JavaScript was this JSX compiler. Is that still a good approach for helping people get into the React mode?
Yeah, so we use JSX exclusively at Facebook and Instagram. Our community, it seems like it's about 50-50. Maybe a little bit more people use JSX than don't. But the way that you build applications in React is you have like a function, basically, that takes in some data that we call props and state, and then it emits this like so-called virtual DOM. And the way that you emit it is you return an object that you construct with like a bunch of built-in functions. So you might say, you know, return react.dom.div parenthesis, you know, react.dom.span, and like nest these function calls. And what we found is that that syntax can get a little bit annoying because it's a little bit hard to map up, you know, where your closing tag is, because you don't have a closing slash div anymore. You have a just like a parenthesis.
Right.
And so obviously, like, the Clojure community, which is Lisp, doesn't care about this and doesn't use JSX because, you know, they believe that that syntax, you know, as a bunch of parentheses is fine. And I'm actually inclined to agree with them. But, you know, for a lot of people, they want they see some benefits in this. So we have a dialect of JavaScript that translates kind of inline HTML literals into JavaScript function calls. Okay. And so that's a fork of a parser called Esprima. And it can just very quickly just run over your code, identify things that look like HTML, and just turn it into function calls. So if you write like a div tag in the middle of your code, it'll just turn it into like div parenthesis parenthesis.
Wow. And then so you can basically just run this as a run like a watch on the files, and it'll just keep watching these things and creating JavaScript out of the build. Or out of the source files, I guess.
Yeah, we can do that. We also have like a development only like in browser transformer thing.
Oh.
So you can say like script type equals JSX and it'll process it, but you know, you only really want to do that in development.
Yeah, right. Okay. So that's good. So basically you kind of got a bridge there so people can write something that's closer to HTML and not have to, you know, or if they wanted to go straight into the programming model, they can go straight in and build it up that way. So two different ways to do it. And I guess many other bindings come along besides JavaScript as well. So that's really, really, really interesting.
Yeah.
So what else do people need to know about React? Is there any tips or tricks on making the leap to this model? Is it pretty foreign to people when they are used to coming from these other things? It would seem like that with the templating, without templating, that maybe it's a little easier to change things and add things because maybe stuff's all in one file or something like that. Is that kind of what you've seen?
That's what we've found. Part of this is you need to kind of try it out on something real, to really internalize how much working in other systems sucks, I think. So you get in kind of this, you start just kind of like writing the minimum amount of code needed to fully express your app, which is pretty nice. And then I build a lot of like examples that compare, React and Ember, React and Angular, React and Backbone or something like that. And I just find myself kind of like having to fight the framework a little bit. So you need to enforce this arbitrary separation where, you've got directives on one side of the fence and markup on the other side of the fence. And you write a lot of code to just glue those together for the sake of gluing them together. Or in the case of a traditional data binding system, you write your program code, and then you have to make sure that you like manually track the data dependencies between them. And if you make a mistake, the system can't warn you that you made a mistake. Your behavior is just incorrect. And so you'll find that like when you kind of get like this liberating abstraction, it's just so complex things just become so much easier. So kind of on the flip side of that, if you kind of write your to-do list or your hello world with React, it's probably going to be a little bit more code than if you use something like Angular or Ember. But the instant that you need to customize anything and make it kind of not just a simple iteration over a list or something, that's when React really shines because it just gives you so much power.
That's great. Yeah. I guess another question I had is you mentioned that you could also render this. I think you mentioned with Node. So how would that work as far as being able to maybe render on the server or and all that?
Well, that's a great question. React is designed to be the like most expressive way that you can render a view hierarchy onto some sort of rendering backend. And all of our rendering backends are basically plugins. So the React core can run anywhere that JavaScript runs. So our default plugin is what we call like the browser DOM plugin. But we have another one that's kind of a subset of that, which renders to an HTML string. And so you can basically boot up React on the server without a browser DOM, which is really heavyweight and expensive. And just render like a plain string of HTML. And then if you want to serve that to Google, you'll get like a pretty nice boost in your page rank. If you want to serve that to the client, you can either serve them a static page and just write your code with React, or you can send that down and then run React on the client, and it will see, hey, it looks like you server rendered the page here and there's markup already there. So it can basically adopt that markup and reuse it. So it won't actually change the page at all when the JavaScript starts. It'll just attach event handlers and start responding to events. So you get like this great situation where if you're like Facebook and you have a lot of JavaScript to download, you can serve down a static HTML page and the user could like start typing a comment, and by the time the user hits submit, the JavaScript has downloaded, but they didn't even notice because it all attached in the background.
Wow, that sounds really great. I mean, I've always had a problem with not being able to serve from this, serve the HTML from the server. When you go to the single page app style, thing. But that sounds like the best of both worlds. I mean, because you can serve it for the crawlers. You can also serve it as a performance improvement for the user because they can see the page quickly. And then if it all binds up and starts working after the JavaScript loads, that sounds really great. So.
Yeah, that's the advantage of again, like coming from within the Facebook gauntlet. So in order for this technology to become the big bet that Facebook has made on it, it had to go through like multiple rounds of really, really smart engineers like trying to kill it, basically. And it has to survive. It's survival of the fittest, right? And one of the things is like we can't like write our entire site in JavaScript and one day wake up and realize like our response times and the developing world are really bad because we block the whole page download on JavaScript. Because in that point, if you're tied to the browser DOM, you need to rewrite your whole site, right? Or rewrite everything. So this was kind of like a a very important part of React from the beginning, which was like, we need to be able to render both server on the client and kind of almost be able to have your cake and eat it too, basically.
Yeah. Yeah, that's excellent. Is there any thought to even possibly, since you could potentially have this virtual DOM on the server and a virtual DOM on the client, is there any thought about, you know, maybe doing some, you know, if somebody was building some kind of a game or something where you needed this state coming in from multiple places, if, you know, it's served over socket.io or something, I don't know. I mean, I'm just theorizing here that you could probably even do some pretty cool, things with having the state in, in both places, or, server and.
So there's some cool ideas. We never actually implemented this idea because we determined that it was, it's a little hard at Facebook scale to have like a lot of state on the server. But there's a couple of cool things that come out of this. So imagine that we kept the virtual DOM representation on the server, and we sent the DOM commands and browser events over socket.io. That means we could do kind of expensive data fetching on the server where it's cheap, and update the UI on the client, rather than like having to do expensive data fetches kind of round trip over the network. Now for like sort of multiplayer applications, like you had mentioned, it turns out that, this hasn't been as good for the applications that I've worked on, because kind of one of the things that, that React focuses on is like the minimal set of mutable state possible in your application. And when you have that, a lot of times it's easier to just share that mutable state across the network than the like full UI itself. So there's actually a package on NPM called React-Multiplayer. And that uses a system called Firebase, where you add this mix into your component, and it'll automatically share it into Firebase. So all users viewing the component will get the same state representation, which is pretty cool.
Yeah.
There's some other kind of cool things around this as well, where if your state is serializable, you can actually, and because React again emphasizes the minimum set of mutable state and just renders whatever's there to the DOM without kind of worrying about the steps leading up to it, you can save and load your application from local storage like very simply. Like you just save the state and you reload it, and React will do the right thing. And you can also like use this technique for bug reports too. So imagine somebody is going through Facebook and like uploading a photo, and for some reason the photo doesn't upload correctly, and the user hits like report a bug. This happens to us all the time. I used to be on the photos team here, and they basically write some profanity into the bug report and they send it to us, and we're just like, oh, well, that was helpful, thank you. But what if we actually were keeping track of all the React state transitions and we sent those to the server along with a bug report? Then we could almost have like a VCR, and we could hit play on the bug report and load it into our console and watch the user interactions as they occurred, and then be like, then we could stop it right, we could load into the development mode of our build and basically look at the all the assertions and make sure that it was executing the way we intended. So there's a lot of stuff that you get for free when you just build like the browser doesn't exist, and you kind of put the browser into its own little corner. And this is like one thing that really distinguishes React from something like Web Components and Polymer and that kind of thing. They're kind of building, they're getting closer and closer in with the browser, and we're getting farther and farther from the browser. And right. I think that our technique is more sustainable in the long term.
Yeah, that sounds like a really great approach. So with React, what are some of the notable users that are using React, and any feedback that they've given you so far?
Let me pull up the list. I made a list recently for this. But the big ones are obviously Facebook and Instagram, kind of where we came up with it. But we've seen pretty great uptick and adoption from Khan Academy. And I think our number two contributor in terms of like lines of code committed is an employee at Khan Academy. So that's pretty awesome, I'd say.
Yeah, that's excellent.
We've also got the the Oscars were last night, and the New York Times feature for, you know, they like have this feature where everyone, you know, looks at all the dresses and tuxedos and stuff and talks about how awesome they are. That's built in React on NewYorkTimes.com. So that's pretty cool. The largest bank in Russia recently released their new web experience, and that's written in React as well. There are some other companies that I'm not really sure if I can talk about what they're doing internally, but you know, very big tech companies using it on some smaller features and some internal tools, and they're still evaluating you know, whether they're going to go full React or not.
Yeah, excellent.
But one thing that's cool is that Khan Academy is all developed on GitHub, so like they went full React, like that they use React for like all their JS or all the new JS that they're doing. And so you can like follow along the development and like see what a production React app looks like by looking at the Khan Academy GitHub.
Wow. Wonderful. Wonderful.
Yeah.
One of the questions I forgot to mention or ask you about was, I know you mentioned there was going to be different targets that you could, you know, it was agnostic as far as what it could target. So you could target the canvas, you could target the DOM. Is there any interest in potentially targeting something like PDF or something like that?
Yeah, I mean, PDF would, we haven't built it, but targeting PDF would make a lot of sense. I mean, anything where you have kind of like a hierarchy of visual components, so like PDFs would be a really good example. Canvas is something that we already target, the browser DOM, HTML. The backend we're currently working on is what we're calling like a remote DOM. So remember earlier we talked about like, you know, what if you ran the virtual DOM in Node and sent messages over sockets? Maybe we wouldn't use that, but maybe we would do it with web workers. So you run your entire application off the main browser thread, so you get the smooth scrolling, and you just send, you know, your DOM manipulations over to the main thread, and the main thread sends back, you know, events to the worker.
Yeah, that sounds really good. So what are, so we just got a few minutes left. What other kind of things do you see for the future of React, or any other kind of projects or related things that might be going on that you know, we should watch out for or think about?
Well, what's next with React? I mean, we're always making improvements. So we've got, you know, people are reporting that their apps got twice as fast with React in the next release, and we have kind of more optimizations coming. So performance is always kind of what I think is interesting is like performance is always going to get better, and the API is always going to get smaller. So we're gonna try to remove some kind of duplicated API calls, you know, that kind of thing. We are going to work on a kind of official shareable components specification. So like, wouldn't it be great if you could just npm install React type ahead, and then you get like a Facebook style type ahead? You can do that today, but we just haven't quite, like, we want to make the experience like really, really slick. So, you know, you search in a component repository page, and there's like example code and a live sample. Like, wouldn't that be great? So that kind of stuff. And, yeah, I mean, just more integrations too, full stack starter kits.
Yeah.
That type of thing. Hoping to convince some of the major frameworks to, you know, use React as their rendering piece, just because I think that our solution is, you know, light years ahead of kind of the status quo, because nobody has built like a browser agnostic rendering engine that targets the browser before. Just kind of trying to get all the pieces in place. But the end goal for React and Facebook and open sourcing React is to get the ideas out there and convince people that the ideas are good. So to convince people that, like, you know, a mutable state in your user interface is something that you should declare war on. You know, rendering your UI in this immediate mode fashion where you just throw out the old UI and re-render the new one and figure out what changed automatically, can be fast and is a lot easier to program. So, you know, if some other system takes React and rips it off and, you know, whatever, like that's still a win for us.
Yeah.
I don't recommend that they do that, because it's actually you know, pretty hard to work out all the kinks, and they should just, you know, contribute to us and we'll contribute to them and stuff. But the real win is in the ideas and the architecture.
Yeah, that sounds great. Well, that's after hearing you talk about all this, I'm going to have to go and check it out. I've looked at some of the examples and stuff, but this really really sounds exciting, and I didn't know about all the depth and how, you know, all the details and all that all plays out, and so I'm really excited to try it out myself and give it a go. So that's awesome. Thanks, Pete.
Hey, thanks.
How can people follow you and maybe contribute back to some of the projects and that? What's the best place to do that?
Well, we've got our GitHub is Facebook/React. And then I'm Floydophone on Twitter, and I only really tweet about like React stuff or like front end web things. We're a pretty friendly group. We've got an IRC chat room on Freenode, which is like /ReactJS, and that's kind of like the Facebook like UI team. A lot of them like idle in there during the workday on Pacific time. And so you can go in there and ping anybody, and we generally respond pretty quick. So
that's great. Yeah. And as far as for a new person to start out, should they just go to the, what is it, reactjs.org? Is that the best place? Or
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. And I know there's videos and examples and all that on there. So that's excellent. So thanks, Pete. I appreciate you taking the time to share all these details about React. I'm excited to see what comes forward from all this, and I think it's a great framework.
Thanks a lot, Jeff.
I hope you've enjoyed this episode of CodeWinds with Pete Hunt. I would love to hear what you think about this interview or about React. Head over to CodeWinds.com/4 and leave me a message. Also, if you would like to help others find this podcast, please give a quick rating on iTunes. That will help boost our visibility in the iTunes directory. Until next time, this is Jeff Barczewski with CodeWinds. Music by Audionautix.com.